Hey, folks. Welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Going to talk Cubs after their Rocky Mountain disaster. Pretty rocky, eh? Whatever else folks might want to do with that. So obviously, we'll talk about the Cubs series loss in Colorado. And kind of, I would like to take a step back and look at the broader context of where things stand. We'll talk about Pete Crow Armstrong's arrival. And yeah, I think that's going to be about the shape of things. And starting with, I think, the series loss in Colorado, kind of 10,000 foot view. I think what's...
Brett, I'm sorry. I need to say something about David Ross. He screwed up big time. The Cubs were on a 5-2 run, and then he pinch hit Alexander Canario. The Cubs are now 2-5 since Alexander Canario played. What is David Ross doing? Why would he allow him to have an at-bat? It has screwed up this team. He doesn't know what he's doing. Unacceptable.
The failure to play Canario was actually the galvanizing force in that clubhouse for some reason. It was all the guys were like, man, he's never going to play Canario. We got to persevere. And then he got one shit at bat against one of the toughest right-handers in baseball, struck out. And the guys were demoralized. You know, they were like, oh, that poor kid. That's what he's going to carry with him forever. That was his one big league plate appearance. So I agree with you. I actually, no.
Sorry, I had to say that.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, there was a, what was it, this series, there was something that a lot of people were getting in a twist about David Ross that I just didn't see it the same way, didn't agree with it, and I'm blanking on it.
It could have been Fulmer pitching. It could have been Fulmer pitching.
Yeah, I mean, that whole end of that game, I think, was kind of understandable the way it played out. And I know
screwed, yeah.
Well, and when Fulmer didn't have his first six pitches, were like, oh shit, they should not have brought this guy back. Folks have to remember there's the three batter rule, so he had to face the next batter no matter what. People were like, what in the world is he doing? Why is he not taking out Fulmer? I think, I guess I would add to that in a non-humorous note, it would have been lighter coming in because he was warming up to face a lefty. You know, little concerned about lighter. When we had all noticed his performance had been kind of spotty, I guess, the last few weeks, but I was particularly concerned when I went back and looked pitch by pitch to see, one, his splitter usage is way down, and out of the last 28 that he's thrown, he's gotten two whiffs. This is a pitch that I believe at his sort of peak of everyone being like, oh shit, this guy's great, earlier this year, I think it had something like crazy, like a 56% whiff rate on that pitch, where more than half the time he threw it, he was getting a whiff, and usually from a lefty. And now it's 2 out of 28. And the spin rate is down to a funky level, and you know, something's just not quite right with it. And obviously the usage is heavy. I just wonder about that pitch specifically as it relates to a guy's hand, because it's a, I don't know, it looks uncomfortable to throw a million times in a short period of time. So, you know, we'll see if he bounces back after a good bit of time off, because the Cubs, of course, need it. Because one thing that did happen over the course of these 3 days in Colorado is that Adbert Alzolay is headed to the injured list with, it's the injury of the year for the Cubs, the forearm strain that you're not super duper worried about. Usually you hear forearm and you're like, oh shit, that's code for the elbow. In this case, you know, Justin Steele had a forearm strain. It was kind of just take a couple weeks off, get right. Same thing with Fulmer, who I should mention struck out the next two batters in that appearance on Monday. And then I think that's the talk, at least, about Alzolay's situation. Is it's just kind of limiting his effectiveness right now, so give him a couple weeks. They tried to give him a week, and it obviously wasn't enough. So hopefully he can come back at the end of the season. And in the meantime, there's going to continue to be this mixing and matching in the bullpen, and I think you're right. In this series, I didn't really have occasion to be freaking out about the bullpen usage. I don't know if you guys want to say anything about that, and I'll circle back to the 10,000 foot view stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my one thing was, like, I'm, as we've discussed on the podcast, I try not to nitpick every decision because I don't know what goes into everything until, you know, you have a debrief with David Ross, and even sometimes he doesn't give you every little detail. But the only thing I, like, you know, I don't love bunting, but I get some of it. And in general, the one thing that stood out to me that I questioned at the time was, Jose Kwas just stopped throwing his slider, and I was like, what is going on here? Why is he only going sinker four-seamer? And it was a little concerning, and thought maybe he stayed in for a batter or two longer than he probably should have. But again, I don't know what the bullpen situation was at the time, and off the top of my head, I can't remember every batter that was coming up and who may have made sense at that time, although Drew Smyly, I think, came in. They ended up winning that game, so it doesn't, like, you know, let's not overthink it. This wasn't a manager-based loss. This was a player-based series loss. And I mean, yeah, we can go to the 10,000-foot view of it all, and it just seemed like we spent a lot of time talking about the Diamondbacks and that series. You know, they didn't play poorly. They didn't come up with a big hit. Some balls didn't fall. I thought they played poorly this week in Colorado. I thought the Tuesday, like, just so many base running mistakes that seemed confusing. I don't, like, why is Bellinger trying for two there? Why is Madrigal trying for three there? I don't get those decisions. I don't get, like, it's not acceptable for Ian Happ to drop that ball. Like, listen, mistakes happen. Base running mistakes happen. These things happen, but they can't happen right now, right? You can't allow these things to happen. Jameson Taillon wasn't good enough after, what was it? It was four shutout innings or three shutout innings?
He started to get in trouble in the fourth. He started to leave it over the heart of the plate.
Yeah, and he was getting ahead of guys and then all of a sudden failing to put them away. It just wasn't, like, it fell apart too quickly for him. The Ian Happ's drop was unacceptable. Like, that really, like, that was a moment when you needed to kind of calm things down and go out and score. Their inability to tack on runs was really rough to watch this week. I don't know, you know, like, you need to keep tacking on runs in Colorado. We know that. And it's just, it was kind of weird to watch because I feel like they're pretty good at doing that lately. And they just couldn't. A couple guys that you expect to get the big hit didn't. Obviously, Yan Gomes did on Monday, and that salvaged the series. But I thought it was a sloppy series. The one, you know, silver lining is that all the other teams trying for the playoff a wild card spot stink as well. So everybody stinks.
My name is Patrick, and I went down a Twitter rabbit hole yesterday, and
oof.
Was this a thing where people were suggesting this team's defense is better than the 2016 defense? What was that?
Wait,
I cannot stop thinking about that.
So what
that
it was
because it's just so absurd.
Yeah, yeah. No. On the broadcast. Yeah. Don't. Hey, take it up with Pat
He's
Hughes.
A Hall of Famer.
If someone wants to take a shot at Hall of Famer Pat Hughes. No, he had suggested on the broadcast that he was maybe watching the best defense he'd ever seen. And then people rightly were like, you know, it's good, but 2016 was historically good. My only addendum to that, because, you know, I love Pat Hughes and I would like to defend him, is I would say you could, if you wanted to, you know, get in one of these bar arguments, you could make an argument that the current composition of the roster, if you selected the best guy at every spot for one game, I think you could probably argue that it's a push if you took one game in 2016, because you go spot by spot, it's like, oh, actually they are pretty close. But the difference obviously is that 2016 had that group performing at that level over the course of a whole season.
I took Pat's comment as like, it's the best he's seen this year. This is their best defensive unit this year. Maybe I
certainly
just wasn't.
Yeah.
I was like doing multiple things while like having the game on, so maybe I didn't fully absorb what he was saying.
We'll just say he's right, but no matter what.
I don't think you can argue that this defense is better than two. I get what you're saying, Brett, like go point by point, but I, you know, the 2016 defense, we're never going to see.
Pat uses the best, and certainly like Dansby and Nico have been phenomenal. I don't really see it across the board, and it made me look up on Baseball Reference, just remembering that defense was awesome because you just put Javi wherever the ball was going to be hit. You had three catchers who you trusted in Game 7 of the World Series, and that clearly having Zobrist and KB took it to a whole nother level defensively. And I think that's where, to me, watching this series, like, it's Coors Field, weird things happen. Like, I can't get super worked up about that if I'm the Cubs. But, like, I thought it was a germane, you know, kind of question, because, as you know, I've been talking to people, it's like, yeah, the Cubs are pretty good, but that says something about the state of the National League, and this doesn't look like a team that's going to win multiple playoff series. And that's obviously getting ahead of ourselves, but this week has made me think about it, just as the calendar really narrows and you look at PCA and Jordan Wicks contributing to a playoff team, and you know, you do have this kind of bright future in front of you, and it will be interesting to see, like, you know, how many more, like, you know, I don't know, buttons this team can push when you have a, after you kind of call up your top prospect and you have a first round pick winning, you know, whatever, three or four games for you down the stretch here. And it's either going to be the Cubs are going to be proven right by that their consistency and their not making, you know, overreacting to any one game, that they can will be proven right if they're drenched in champagne, or this season's going to come crashing down really hard on everyone, that, you know, maybe we've been kind of dismissing some of this of, oh, it's a one run game, oh, luck will even out, oh, that was a good team, oh, it's Coors Field. We'll see. I think that's going to be the fun part here over those last, whatever it is, 15 games. Either the Cubs make the playoffs and it's an amazing, great, fun season, or the Cubs collapse down the stretch and this is an absolute failure and a totally wasted opportunity.
Which is especially going to suck if it's that one, by the way, because again, we talk about the context of the whole season. This wasn't expected. You know, it's not like this is, if they miss the playoffs at a season level, that this was what a failure. You know, what a failure of this powerhouse team to miss the playoffs. I was thinking about how the Javier Assad start is actually a nice microcosm for what these last two series have been. So if folks will recall, his outing against the Diamondbacks at Wrigley, really significant lack of command in the zone, but he was getting hit hard because he was leaving stuff over the middle. His diverse pitch mix helps a little bit because he can throw 5-6 pitches, but he didn't really have any of them working great. Okay. So Cubs lose 3 or 4 in that series, and you're kind of like, well, it was mixed. That easily could have been a 2-2 series split. Come to Colorado, and then that was easily the worst we've seen Javier Assad look this year. I mean, it was really quite bad. I think the results don't even go far enough in sort of showing how bad he was, if you were watching. For him to throw a 50% strike rate is just, it's jarring. It's very jarring. And so you see that, and if it were in isolation, you would say, well, you know, he's pitching at elevation, he's at Coors Field, that is an adjustment for all your pitches. It's very hard. There's a reason guys struggle when they come there for one start. It just messes with your pitches. Okay, can throw that away pretty easily. But there was that start before, and it's like, oh, is he wearing down? Is it actually both things? And I think you can have that same conversation about the Cubs as a whole. And I think that's why a lot of people feel stung by this Rockies series and sort of unwilling to say, weird shit happens at Coors Field. You lose 2 or 3. The Brewers got swept there earlier this year. It just happens. That's true. And that might be what this is. You know, we might look back. We'll be able to look back in 2 weeks and say, ah, that's what that was. Or we'll look back in 2 weeks and say, ah, that was where sort of the cracks were starting to show on a roster that's stretched a bit thin. I think we can acknowledge that they got to this point of competitiveness. A lot of that is built on the strength of guys having, like, really surprising strong seasons. Okay. We see it up and down the roster, in the bullpen, whatever. That doesn't always last the whole year. And so if you're needing that in order to stay at your current level of competitiveness, you know, there can be some wear down. Again, we see it in the bullpen with health. We see it with some effectiveness of guys. Cody Bellinger is in a little bit of a funk, and you wonder, is that a thing or not? Because as we know, he's the engine of this offense. And so I think it is, you know, this is my 10,000-foot view of where things stand now. I think it is equally plausible that the Diamondback series was what we discussed. You know, they kind of actually looked better than the results. Two coin flip games. Like, that's just baseball randomness. That's going to happen. You know, that's what happens when you're a good but not great team. And then this Rocky series, you know, it's course weirdness. They made some huge base running mistakes that probably flipped one of the games. They, you know, Jameson Taillon gave up some home runs. They dropped a ball. What, you know, they had 11 runners stranded yesterday. So clearly they were hitting. They were hitting. They just weren't hitting when guys were getting on base or hitting for power. Maybe it's just weird. Maybe it's just weird course stuff. Or it's the other thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. Like, I don't know. I don't feel strongly either way about, like, oh, they're going to be fine or, like, a collapse is coming, right? Because some of the offensive stuff, you know, there's, like, little things that I want to see. Like, I need to look it up, but, like, I feel like their last 10 home runs, 9 have been solo shots. Just random weird stuff like that. Is that, like, that's not... they're just coming. That's like the sequencing stuff we talk about, right? That's like, they're not getting that a couple men on base when they finally find their power. The home runs aren't coming often enough. I think only 2 homers in the series, right? In a series at right. Yeah. So I know you could say, okay, you know, Dansby missed one by a few feet or whatever, but still, you want to hit more home runs in Colorado.
Chris Bryant, who hasn't played in 2 months, hit as many home runs right. in this series as the Cubs did.
Right, right. Like there are little things that I'm concerned about. Assad is one of them. I agree with your assessment perfectly there. Like I thought, like that's exactly what I was thinking as watching that. I was like, he didn't get hit. Like he a lot of luck the last time he went out and didn't look good. And again, he just doesn't look good. It was an uneasy feeling the entire time he was out there. It was like, this lead is, they need to get more runs on the board because 2-0 is not enough with the way he's pitching right now. He's just not on the edges like he was before. That 8-inning game in Cincy, was it Cincinnati? Yeah. You know, everybody wanted him to go 9 and Ross was hesitant to even put him out there for 8. I don't know if that's lingering effects. I doubt it. It's probably just the season as a whole or just a little blip and he's going to lock it back in. We'll see. Kwas is a concern for me. Like, why did he abandon his slider? We didn't really get an answer to that. There were a couple questions asked about it that I was watching the Marquee post game. And they weren't answered really. So I don't know if the reporters got more the next day or what, but there was no answer to that. So I don't know what was going on there. So yeah, like those are my concerns. I thought Brad Boxberger looked okay. It's good that Fulmer's back. I think those two things will help in a sense because Alzolay missing, I think is a pretty big deal. Like this bullpen is a mess right now. And we just don't know who David Ross can trust. And I think everybody's questioning every move he makes because it's really hard for him to figure out who he trusts right now. It's like Julian Merriweather, Leiter's starting to get shaky. And I get what you're saying with the splitter. I think some of his like change going away from it is because guys aren't offering. And so he's like maybe if I use it less, they'll start offering again when I go back to it. I think he's just trying to change things up. He does have a pretty diverse pitch mix since he is a former starter. And we didn't even mention that Candelario's on the IL. I don't know. He struggled so much that I think
I was just going to say, we didn't mention it because he's been rough for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So he may just need the time off to get right. I wonder how long that's been bugging him and how much that's impacted him at the plate. Probably a decent amount. I think with Pete Crow Armstrong, I think if you're saying he has to sit or if you're saying he has to play, I think either can be debated. Like it's a debate right now. Like, is it, do you need more offense right now or do you need?
I would say both of those are probably wrong. Right. If you're saying he absolutely has to start every day or you're saying he absolutely has to sit, I think both of those are wrong.
Yeah, you have to pick and choose your moments with him. I get the defense is huge. Really impressive out there defensively outside of the one sun ball. The bats don't look good, and that's fine. That's not like saying that he's going to be a bust. I'm just saying they don't look good right now. He can't catch up to fastballs, and they are dotting up his weakness at the top of the zone, and he can't do anything about it. He just can't. He's not doing anything about it right now. It's fine. He'll adjust. He'll learn. He'll get better. Like, that's what has to be the hope. I'm not saying like he can't handle major league pitching. I'm saying they're exposing his weakness immediately. He doesn't even get that, like, I'm going to get a hot weekend and then you're going to expose me. Nope. They found it and they exposed it, and he's struggling, and you know, we'll see what happens there. But I think Ross has to pick and choose when he sees the field, because right now they just need to score runs and kind of, they need one of those blowout games. They needed that 7-3 win, I think, you know. Like, I guess the one thing is, like, did Merriweather pitch in that series? Merriweather and Leiter didn't pitch in that series, and they get an off day now, so those guys are rested. So if you want to take a positive away, there's that.
They just finished, what, 27 games in 27 days. They have an off day today. They have Steele and Hendricks lined up this weekend. Another off day coming off that Diamondbacks series. No Gallen and Kelly. Manageable homestand against the Pirates and Rockies. And then when you finish on the road, but against the Brewers and Braves, two teams that may not have a whole lot to play for at the end of September, correct? Like, this was a bad series. It did not look great. We have all seen these warning signs of a team that really was kind of in survival mode for a very long time. You see the signs of fatigue, but if you can kind of weather this, and that is one thing that the Cubs have been very good all season of, weathering injuries, kind of riding the hot streaks, kind of patching things together, or you know, whatever you want to call it. Like, they've done that to this point. And if they can just get through another one of these kind of ruts, it does present pretty favorably down the stretch.
The only thing that you'll have to watch out for, I would say, in the Diamondback series, that it's the two sides of the coin are the Cubs are going to miss Gallen and Kelly, which is good, and they get to deploy Steele and Hendricks again, which is good, but it's not always great when a team gets to see a guy twice in such quick succession, and particularly in guys like Hendricks and Steele, who have a limited pitch mix, and we know why they have success in spite of that. But you do wonder, getting to see a guy that quickly. Sometimes it does help the eye level, so to speak, of the hitters. And so hopefully for the Cubs, it will be a matter of getting to face lesser quality pitchers. And Steele and Hendricks have been really solid, obviously, for most of the season, Steele more so than that. So you overall like the Cubs' chances of taking 2 of 3 in that series. And we've gotten to that point of the year where you are having to sort of really think about these series at a micro level and say, yeah, you got to take 2 of 3. That's, you know, if you don't, you know, I was doing a check-in on the standings this morning and sort of looking at the future schedules for the other teams. And there are not tough schedules ahead for these other teams. Now, the Cubs don't have a tough schedule either, because they're not playing good teams, and the one good team that they're playing, well, the one great team they're playing, the Braves, may have already sewn up that top overall spot in the NL by the time the Cubs play. And so it's not going to be an easy road for the Cubs, even as they already, they're in playoffs position right now. You know, like, I think people lose sight of that too, that they are on the inside right now. You know, they're closer to the wild card one spot than they are to being out of the playoffs. They're a game and a half behind the Phillies. And so the stars are still aligned for the Cubs to stay in this thing. It's just that I don't know that they're going to get a ton of help externally, because the teams around them aren't great, but they have kind of cupcake schedules. If for the folks out there who want to do the watching other games and rooting, you're going to be doing a ton of rooting for the Mets and the Cardinals because they are all over the schedules of every single other team the Cubs are competing with. It's Cardinals and Mets, Cardinals and Mets, Cardinals and Mets. So, you know, two of my least favorite teams in the universe, but I will do my duty and become a big Cardinals and Mets fan for the next couple weeks.
I mean, some little things that I think, I mean, did you say Bellinger is kind of struggling?
Only that we're not seeing him carry the offense in the last, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I think his at-bats have been okay. I thought he didn't really show up the past two. It was like he got thrown out at second and then stopped hitting the last 2 days.
Fuck this.
But outside of that, I think he's been fine. I'm trying to think through like what's going right, right? Obviously, young pitcher
Dansby's been hot as heck. Wicks.
Dansby, since that four-hit game in Cincinnati, has looked great. Saya is scorching hot. And I think Bellinger's still hitting. Nico looks really good at the plate. Yeah, he just looks good. I mean, in general, he looks good. And even, I know, like, it's weird because I don't always watch the broadcast, but Sutt was really hammering how bad Ian Happ's been. I don't, like, has he been striking out a lot or something? I don't think he's been striking out that much. Like, he's been taking his walks and he's been hitting the ball hard and hasn't had a ton of luck, I felt like.
He's been what Ian Happ has been all year, and it's a profile that for whatever reason people just don't appreciate. Do you know by clutch score he's been the Cubs' most clutch hitter this year, which I know just drives people crazy to hear that. And then he drops, you know, he Brant Brown's a fly ball, and that just is going to stick.
Which
with
I still think, like, you just can't do that in that situation. That's like you can like feel the game fall like unraveling at that point, and that's just a bad. I get fans being up in arms about it, and frankly, like the whole like people not appreciating Ian Happ. It's like, what are you going to do? Like, that's just how it is. You know, there are certain players that just rub people the wrong way, and he's one of them for some reason. The fan base just doesn't really love him. So, you know, he's valuable in certain ways, and I mean, that's the profile that people get mad about, right? Like the high walks, sees a lot of pitches, doesn't hit for a super high average. I get people being annoyed by that, and he's not hitting for a ton of power this year, so fair enough. Like, complain about him. I just didn't think he was in this awful rut until I was listening to Sutcliffe, and I was like, has he really been that bad? Like, I feel like his at-bats have been pretty solid. Anyways, my point is there's some bright spots here. I feel like those guys just need to continue. Dansby was the one that really had my attention. Like, he's putting together some great at-bats, and like with him and Saya finally hitting, I think like you have that three guys with those two and Bellinger that you have to hope kind of carry the team through Arizona. And if other guys step up, great. You know, occasional Morel home run and occasional Yan Gomes clutch hit. Amaya kind of had some good at-bats. I feel like he comes and goes as well. So just in general, I'm looking for the offense to kind of come through, get some big hits, too many men left on base. Just, I mean, the base running stuff was really uncharacteristic too, right? I'm
just
thinking
say,
through the season, that's just, like, that's not how they are.
No,
they don't
three,
get thrown out.
I actually liked David Ross's response to that when he was asked about it after, where when it's, as a discussion, if you tried to frame it as like, you know, what's happening with the base running, right? He's like, it's three outs on the bases. And, you know, it's kind of right, because it's three that just sort of, each of them individually was like, I mean, I was howling at my TV each time. I was like, what are you doing? Even as it was playing out, I knew all three were just
the PCA
bad.
One was a hell of a play.
Well, no.
By the catcher.
No. It was okay, here's my thought on that. And I love PCA. I'm not looking to denigrate PCA, because he had, I think, in a lot of ways, a really emblematic series of what he can be, which is a very helpful piece. So I'm not trying to shred him. On that one, you know what happened? He's coming up through the minor leagues, and he's in dirt and go mode, because he's probably never been thrown out on a ball that hit the dirt in the minor leagues. But in the big leagues, if that catcher gets a true bounce, he's going to throw you out every time. A big league catcher is going to throw you out every time. Because that was not even a close play. It wasn't even close.
That was a pretty sweet pick. That was a pretty sweet pick on that. And
it was a lucky pick. It just bounced into his glove. But
and is it Elias Diaz? That's his name, right?
He had a lot of good throws in that series.
He has a cannon, man. Yeah, I was
not aware of that.
Yeah. Like I know he's a good defensive catcher. I didn't realize he was that good as far as throwing runners out, but he had an awesome series defensively. So, my point is, clean up these little things that you don't normally see from this team. I'm wondering if that's just fatigue and some poor decision making. And then just, I agree with what Patrick's point. It's like they should be able to take care of business here, right? Like they have no one to blame but themselves, especially if Atlanta and Milwaukee kind of clean things up. I think we can. I'm not sure if we said it, but I think it's time to just focus on the wild card, right? Like if weird things happen, weird things happen.
Only
right?
Because,
but I'm saying, I'm focusing on what's happening with the wild card standings.
Because they end the season with the Brewers. Technically, they're within three games. But they're only four right now. So if they're within three games by the end, they can. A lot of people are like, just focus on the wild card. So I'm not throwing you under the bus. A lot of people
you,
are.
You
that,
keep believing. You keep
I'm a believer. Be I'm a believer. The Brewers all the way until the end. I'm just
because they suck. Yeah. They're frauds. They are frauds. They're going to be in the World Series. And I'm like, these frauds.
Yeah, I'm with you, Zada. In my mind, when we're figuring out our coverage plans for that last weekend in Milwaukee, it's going to be, the Brewers will be in like clinch mode, or I think it'll be watching the wild card standings down the stretch here. Just the math doesn't really work. I'm trying to remember when the Brewers came back on the Cubs in 2018 to force that game 163. It was like five, maybe like Labor Day weekend. Like we're already into the middle of September here. And that took the Cubs actually playing fairly well down the stretch. It's not like they totally collapsed. Yeah, again,
Brewers
are
insane.
I think you kind of have to, ride these waves. It looked like, the Giants looked like toast, right? When they were swept out of Wrigley Field and, they keep hanging around. We all thought the Reds didn't have enough pitching. They're still hanging around. The Marlins
looked
one of those.
Toast.
Did they lose eight in a row?
Marlins looked like
not
toast.
That long ago. Something like that. They're still around. I think it'll be coming down to the end. And ultimately, I think, Cody Bellinger wants a huge mega deal like from the Cubs. Like, carry this team into the playoffs. Like, Dansby Swanson, this is why they gave you an enormous contract. Like, play big down the stretch. And Ian Happ, you took what may have been a slight, you took what was presented to you rather than risking in free agency, like, because you wanted to win with this team, like, catch the fly ball, hit a big home run. Like, the Cubs figured all this stuff out on the pitching side. Well, let's see them do it here in the last 2 weeks. Like, it's all in front of them, all within reach, not unreasonable. But there's going to be some justifiably angry and frustrated fans on Twitter because they're not going to run the table. There's going to be, I think David Ross said it last weekend after one of those Diamondback losses. Like, we knew this wasn't going to be like cruise control into the playoffs. There's always going to be adversity and tough moments and challenges down the stretch. And they sure got a lot of it in Coors Field.
Three parting thoughts. One, all of that is further confirmation of something we've said for a couple months, which is that this is a legitimately good team. It's just not a great team. And this is what it looks like when a team is legit good, but not great. Two, I'm surprised I haven't seen it on Twitter yet. Someone queuing up Ron Santo's, oh no, with the Ian Happ drop. That might still be coming. And then
he dropped the ball.
That was classic. And then lastly, how funny would it be if the Brewers do clinch the Central before that series to end the year with the Cubs, and they have to decide how much are they going to rest guys and ultimately help the Cubs get into the playoffs? That would be pretty uncomfortable on both sides of the aisle, I think, to be rooting for certain things at that time. So that's another reason why I will continue to hope that the Cubs stay within three games, can get within three games of the Central by the end, because I would like to just be rooting to beat the, you know, just play it out on the field and see what happens. But, you know, that is,
I just
that
had
is,
a thought, like, what if the Cubs have clinched a wild card spot? And the Brewers haven't clinched the division, and they need to pitch like Burns and Woodruff there, and the Cubs don't have like, and the Cubs are resting Steele and Hendricks for that wild card round.
And well, then, especially and then they if they were to end up the Brewers facing each other in the wild card round, right? Like if the Cubs get wild card three, they would face.
It's not going
to
happen.
The Cubs could intentionally try to tank one of the games while the Brewers use up Burns and Woodruff. Oh, this is some.
There we go.
This is some chess stuff. All right, we're gonna level stuff. We'll holster that one until end of the month. All right, this is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can read my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. You can read theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you listening as always and hope you have a great weekend. Cubs playing the Diamondbacks out in Arizona, and we'll chat with you early next week. Take care.